Dean Everett, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, my subject, the aims and objectives of the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Illinois, is one of great importance to the staff of the Mechanical Engineering Department. And I suspect that it should be of some importance to the supporters of the university. However, it is vitally important to our students of mechanical engineering, not because of its academic significance, but for the reason that much of the quality and character of the education which they may receive during 4 years, four of the most precious years of their lives, is largely dependent upon the composite aims and objectives of their major department. We of the Department of Mechanical Engineering will continue to develop and strengthen our educational programs at both the undergraduate and graduate levels, and we will intensify our research work and expand our services to the people of the state. We will strive to maintain an excellent staff of teachers and researchers, for the teacher, second only to the student, is the most important component in education. And teaching without research, or the converse, research without teaching, are each educationally sterile. The curriculum represents the composite judgment of the teachers as a prescription for a sound education. It must not be static. Its ingredients and its directions for use must change with the times. The laboratories and other physical facilities must continually be developed and improved to provide both the environment and the tools so necessary to the learning processes of students in engineering. Full utilization of the educational advantages present in our great university can be obtained only through complete cooperation among the members of our departmental staff, the members of many other departments of this university and of other universities, and representatives of industry and of agencies of the people. I could spend all of my time discussing the procedures essential to developing these ideals, but I shall move on to what I consider to be some of the larger objectives, not only of one department of engineering, but of engineering education as well. I am going to discuss very briefly, in the few minutes available, some of the cultural and ethical responsibilities of engineers. Engineering education is giving much attention today to ways and means of developing an awareness of these responsibilities in our students. Much of what I wish to say has been expressed before, but it may be somewhat novel to hear an engineer say these things. Several of the ideas were brought out and discussed at the recent International Congress for Engineering Education at Darmstadt. Men have always had to fight to survive, fight in a merciless struggle against nature, against hunger and thirst, heat and cold, water and fire, disease and want. Technology provides the means for this struggle, and it is therefore a foundation upon which rests the development of any form of culture. In producing these means, for example, the steam engine, electricity, the internal combustion engine, machine tools, technology has brought in its train tremendous consequences. There have been changes not only in the balance of political power, but even of mankind itself. But what engineers rightly consider to be great feats are often not considered as blessings or even advances by many people. For by the use of machines, the economically weak in their vulnerable position may have many times been exploited. Whenever engineers fail to realize these relationships, they resemble people building a road, but leading in the wrong direction. Many engineers wrongly believe that they have discharged their responsibilities in producing the machines and the articles of commerce. This belief results from a highly specialized training which fails to endow the student with comprehensive understanding. A sound technical training alone is not enough. The student must also learn what engineering has meant and now means to world history. He should know something about the consequences of important inventions and engineering developments. Knowing about the influence of technology upon the life of generations and nations will enable him to draw more nearly correct conclusions for his work. In order to gain the time necessary for an education along these lines, these broader lines, the engineering colleges ought to confine their undergraduate engineering training to the basic subjects in the technical and scientific fields and greatly reduce their specialized applications. If civilization is to be preserved, it will be through the efforts of those with broader views rather than those of the specialist or expert. It seems obvious that the engineering student must be taught to recognize the impact of technology on world history. Science and engineering are often blamed for the catastrophic situation of civilization, and certainly they are partially responsible. The inventor of a weapon may be morally responsible for every murder committed with the weapon, although a lack of that particular weapon would not hinder the murderer to commit his crime. The inventor is no more responsible for the abuse of a dangerous instrument than he who accepts the order for placing such instruments into the hands of the criminal. Like the knife in the Stone Age, so in our modern so-called cultured times, many developments of engineering which were meant for the benefit of mankind are abused. The greatest developments of our time, the airplane, radio, and atomic energy, to mention but a few, are used to the detriment of mankind. The cause of this degradation of the uses of engineering and science is the materialistic conception of the world. Continued and prosperous developments in technology are impossible without higher standards for humanistic culture as a whole. Otherwise, further developments of the technical sciences will lead to a savage state of mankind and the self-destruction of our civilization. For these reasons, engineering students must be so trained and instructed in the broader aspects of life that they will develop a positive philosophy of genuine service to mankind rather than a narrow specialty for selfish use. The engineer must step out of his role of technical specialist and assist in the solution of public questions for which his training and outlook have fitted him in modern society. Philosophy alone has never been able to serve as a leader and guardian of the mind in seeking to achieve realization of the ideals of mankind. Therefore, the engineer must set his own cultural goal. His philosophy should be a cultural philosophy of technology. The relationships between technology and the other cultural spheres are necessarily technical in character. Technology or engineering may be defined as the planned development of nature's resources and the planned utilization of nature's forces for the improvement of the conditions of human life. Engineering is one of the highest forms of human activity, just as religion is the manifestation of suffering mankind. Engineering and religion are the opposite poles of human life. Engineering represents the active human being, and religion represents the suffering human being. Engineering struggles to become more independent from nature, whereas religious philosophy is primarily concerned with the human relations which result from the influence of the material world on the spiritual world. Cultural progress manifests itself when there is a proper correlation between engineering and philosophy. Christ's message of salvation made the slave equal to the freeborn before God. Yet this ideal could be realized only when technical progress brought about the utilization of the resources and forces of nature for the benefit of man. The transformation of the chemical energy of coal into mechanical energy has made available to mankind enormous possibilities. The effective power obtained in this way can be expressed in terms of technical slaves. In our great industrial country, the number of technical slaves is more than a dozen for every man, woman, and child. The civilization of our times is based on this labor of these technical slaves in the same way that the great civilizations of the past were possible only through the labor of human slaves. It therefore becomes evident that the mere proclamation of human ideals is inadequate unless there is also the ability to realize these ideals. Thus, we see the need for helping our students to think well about these aspects of sociology, religion, ethics, and philosophy. It is axiomatic that the main object of a university education is to enable men and women to think logically and accurately for themselves about any problem with which they may be faced. To enable a person to do this, he must be trained not only in how to think logically, but he must also be trained in how to find the requisite facts without which he cannot start to think. How to select the facts relevant to the problem in hand, and how to make allowances for the facts which he may have missed. The second objective of a university education, as for all education, is to train men and women for living. This will be best attained where there is ample opportunity for thorough consideration of the problems which in every century have worried great men. Our engineering curriculum must make provision for much more of this training for the engineer who reaches a position where he has to exercise executive authority may quickly find that he needs his technical skill merely as a background to deal with the other multitudinous problems of life as they affect others who actually use their technical skill. Thirdly, a university education should afford the widest possible opportunities for men and women to develop as many sides of their personalities as possible, and to make those experiments and mistakes in human relationships which they will never again in their lives be able to make under such favorable circumstances. There is no longer any question concerning the primary requisites in mechanical engineering education. We must expand and intensify to a considerable extent the scientific and technical training of our students. We must develop the mental outlook of the engineering graduate, not only by professional training, but with the aim for a maturity of character, able to recognize a responsibility toward his fellow man. The young mechanical engineer about to leave the University of Illinois ought to possess, besides knowledge and ability, a sound personality and a purposeful mind. I must admit that we have not yet entirely spelled out the ways leading to the full realization of these aims and purposes. We find basic and professional training, general and special education, to be polar pursuits, and many of the problems of their synthesis and mutual balances are unsolved. In conclusion, I conceive our principal aim in mechanical engineering to be directed toward providing our students with the best general education possible within the limitations imposed by a program of rigorous instruction in technical sciences and engineering. This will require a continuing critical review of the program to make as certain as is humanly possible that the emphasis placed upon the various components, such as basic science, technical engineering, research, and general education, are kept in proper perspective to each other. The objectives of our department as a part of the university are to contribute service to the people of the state, to contribute to knowledge through research, while making our primary contribution to our students in providing them with an education for living and a distinguished training for the practice of the profession of mechanical engineering.